This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Learning about the Civil War sure has changed. There are digitized war records courtesy of the National Archives, online videos of battle reenactments, and iPod owners can even download a 3D app to view Civil War photos. The Wilson Library at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill is also getting in the online media effort to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the war. This morning, the library launched a new blog at the exact time the attack on Fort Sumter began in 1861. The blog will feature a war artifact or document every day for the next 4 years, the duration of the Civil War. It's an ambitious online project generated by an entire team of archivists at the Wilson Library, and it's my pleasure to welcome two of them to the program today. Tim West is the curator of the Southern Historical Collection at the Wilson Library, and Biff Hollingsworth is the collecting and public programming archivist at the Wilson Library. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Frank.
It's so great to be here.
And Frank Fee is still with us. I want to ask you about this project itself. You're spearheading the blog project called Civil War Day by Day. It's going to run for the next 4 years. So give us a sense of what visitors are going to see when they log on, Biff.
Yeah, thank you. We are going to feature each day one item from our collections, which dates to exactly 150 years prior to that day. So like you said, it's an ambitious project. Hopefully we will keep it going through the 4 years, but we're really proud that, you know, the Southern Historical Collection, North Carolina Collection, University Archives, Southern Folklife Collection, and Rare Book Collection, all in Wilson Library. Sorry to get all those out there.
Mm-hmm. That'll be the last time.
That's the last time. we'll say the five collections from now on. But they have incredible resources on the history of the Civil War, the culture, life during Civil War era. And so we really felt that we owed our constituents this to get these resources out as sort of the tip of the icebergs, just to get people in the door and see all the great resources that we have.
And why a blog?
A blog just fit perfectly for what we wanted to do. Fantastic that we could sort of mimic the experience that people had during the Civil War in unfolding the experience day by day. Each day you would just get a little bit of information, and you'd kind of have to put the pieces together as the weeks went on in the war. So the blog was format was perfect for that, and also we wanted to make it as interactive as possible, so allowing for comments and people to add transcriptions of items or other links to other great things out there was really perfect for us.
And Tim, what went on this morning at 4:30?
Well, it popped up, I guess you'd say. And now we hear that it's been picked up. Google is noticing it, and so.
And what was online? What went online?
Well, a notice in our collections of that had to do with the bombardment of Fort Sumter and how munitions were a concern, and
Well, it's a wonderful thing because actually they're telling that it's an order to stop using so much ammunition. Mm-hmm. Let's go from 2 hours to every 20 minutes to – or every 10 minutes, I think, to 20 minutes.
That's right. I believe it's from a lieutenant colonel on one of the batteries surrounding the fort, I believe from Morris Island. And he's saying at noon, stop firing every 2 minutes and go to 4 minutes so that we can conserve some of our mortar ammunition.
So they're running out of ammo from the first shot.
Well, it could also be – I kind of think it might have been a psychological thing. Yeah. They just wanted to keep kind of this rhythm of the bombardment going. So it's really interesting to see that particular aspect.
How valuable is the Wilson Library? It seems to me that no one can do any serious scholarship around the Civil War without making a trip to the Wilson Library.
Oh, I'd hardly agree there. I think we often say that. We have tremendous resources. We think we have the largest accumulation of personal and organizational manuscripts relating to the whole American Southern region. We have the most extensive collection of print materials relating to any one state in the country in the North Carolina collection. And all this goes back to a time, I think, in the late 19th, early 20th century when the South was, especially its historians, were concerned that it was not being documented as well as the other parts of the country. Sort of an inferiority sense there that we needed to do something about. So intensive collecting was undertaken, and UNC Chapel Hill, as usual, was progressive and provided some resources that other schools weren't. And so this tremendous resource began to be built, and it's been continuing now for 100 years or more.
Frank Fee, how much of what's available at the Wilson Library have you used to put together this your journalism project?
Well, let's put it this way. Without the Wilson Library collections, we would not have the project. The material that we were able to get to was fantastic in terms of, as the students mentioned earlier, microfilm copies of the newspapers, and in some cases very complete runs of the newspapers. But we also were looking at letters, diaries, all of which come together and make this marvelous puzzle come to life, essentially. So in terms of how much we used it, a tiny fraction of what was available. We used it to the max in terms of our program, but there's so much more there. And I just every time I go online and look at the finding guides and whatnot, I just marvel at what more we could do.
Well, that's the great thing about the blog, isn't it? It seems to me, Biff, is that you can actually give us all access to this stuff because otherwise we'd have to kind of make a trip, and it's hard to use microfilm. And the kids these days, they don't know what it is, and they're scared. But also what you said, I mean, but you can have the archives online. We can have access, and we can search and find things. But the idea of the blog, and I think you mentioned it, the war unfolds. I mean, people didn't know how this thing was going to turn out. It's hard for us to understand that when a war ends, that people in the middle of it didn't know how it was going to turn out. And that's your sense when you have to log on every day to see the latest blog post.
Exactly. And I'm not a Civil War historian myself, so I do know how it ends up in 1865, but there are a lot of missing pieces in the middle that are going to be really exciting for me to figure out as well. But people can follow, like you said, check in every single day, and we'll be providing what we're calling threads, so certain diaries or certain people, certain series of events that you can follow over a series of weeks or even years, up to years, because we have these diaries where these entries during the war continue throughout the war, so you get to follow a single person's experience.
Well, give us an example.
I brought an example of – actually, this is from the home front. It's not a soldier writing, but this is a diary of a woman named Margaret Ann Meta Morris Grimble, and she's writing just outside of Charleston, and this is as Fort Sumter is being fired upon, and she writes on the day – April 12th, and I'll also just read quickly an April 14th piece as well, but on the 12th she says, things seem at last to have reached the war point. The 17th Regiment has been ordered down to Morris Island, and the Northern government have sent to inform the Southern that they intend to reinforce the forts and collect the revenue. A fleet is expected off the harbor, and everything is in a state of preparation. So even the day of, she's writing from Charleston, so there's not that delay that we often see in letters and diaries that go, you know, the next day or several days later when they see the newspaper reports. And on the 14th, she updates that's the day that the official surrender of the fort occurred. The bombardment ended on the 13th, but the official surrender ended. So she writes on the 14th, Lewis went down yesterday afternoon and returned today by an express train. He brings us news that Fort Sumter is given up after a gallant defense. When Major Anderson evacuated, he requested to be allowed to salute his flag, and General Beauregard said that he had defended his command so bravely that he should be permitted to do so. So we're getting reports, you know, just outside of Charleston right on the day.
So. And this really is. I mean, we try to get at this so often in the study of history to find out what were folks thinking on the ground, and how can we get a more complete picture of wars that tend to be reported, you know, from the top down. And this seems to me an ideal way, Frank. I mean, even for journalists to go back and try to understand this, it's a great way to study the art of journalism to figure
Absolutely.
Out how to put these pieces together and make something sensible out of it.
Absolutely, and it is a kind of a case study method that you could apply here and look at it. And often as I'm doing my research, I'm kind of projecting, you know, what would I have done, how would I have done this differently, what were their concerns and what have you. So you get these really great glimpses. There's one collection, a small one, I believe, in Wilson that is the letters of a reporter for the New York Times. During this period. And the Times, you have to remember, at this stage was about 10 years old, so it was not the masterful paper that it became. But the reporter is complaining that those guys at the Herald have much more money to spend, and they can have horses, and I don't have a horse, and what have you. And this is just a glimpse of what life was like on the field.
That'd be great. An expense account with hay would be worth, for me, be a great thing to see. What are some of the other examples? What are some of the other things we're going to see, Biff?
Well, continuing in April, so a great discovery that we made, we actually found in one of our collections that we have two prints, photographic prints, images of Fort Sumter that were taken just 3 days after the fall. So it was amazing to see those, and I actually communicated with the Tulane archives just to confirm that is actually what we had, and they were able to help us and confirm that was the case, that these are probably among the first 100 images of the Civil War. So we have two prints in our collection.
This is – we talked about the archive itself and the wealth of material at the Wilson. How did the Wilson come to get this collection, all of this material, Tim?
Well, I'm thinking first of the Southern Historical Collection because that's where I work and know best. And that goes back to an extremely assiduous and talented collector in the early days, a fellow named J.G. Darulak Hamilton, who was the head of the history department at UNC, who had great contacts throughout the South. And the university provided him with a Model A Ford so he could drive all over the South and mine his contact and send things back to Chapel Hill. Wilson Library had just been completed in 1929. It was built as a great fireproof library, the grandest library in the Southeast, and so every scrap of paper should be coming back there from all over the South. And the people who collected print were doing the same sorts of things. So
This is a four-year project. You're going to do this for 4 years. So have you laid everything out yet, or are you going to do some of this on the fly?
It's great job security, isn't it? No, it's we've really kicked off. We've got probably 2 or 3 months in the can right now, and we may evolve as we go, but we've got that ready to go. We're finding things. We've got things into 1863 and 1864, but we're certainly cognizant of all the things that we have and the things that we want to do around some of the major milestones and anniversaries later in the war.
And the Wilson Library is sponsoring an exhibit called The Homefront on the Hill, Chapel Hill and the University during the Civil War. Can you tell us a little about that?
That's right. Like Professor Fee was talking about, this started in February and it'll be up until May 8th through commencement weekend at UNC. And it really focuses on Chapel Hill, Orange County during the war. With Chapel Hill during the Civil War, the town did not see any military action until the last 2 and 3 weeks following the surrender of troops at Appomattox and the occupation of the town of Chapel Hill by Union forces. So it's a little bit of an anomaly as far as the experience of a southern town, but not seeing anything until the very end. But they certainly had a lot of sacrifices, sending their sons and brothers off to the war, and North Carolina lost, a huge amount of troops among the southern states. So you see the sacrifices. But this exhibit is to explore some of that, but not just the military aspects, but the social aspects as well. It's letters from home talking about sending supplies off to troops.
And including those wonderful stories about President Swain's daughter and her scandalous scandalous love life.
Exactly.
Fully covered. Yeah.
Fully covered. And the UNC professor who is fired. Tell us about this, because this, again, it gets back to William Holden, too. It's a fairly interesting story.
Well, Tim and Biff, you might want to come in on this, but basically in 1857, I believe, was the one of the faculty essentially argued that this was the southern way of life was not the way it was supposed to be. And help me out with some details here. But
well, Benjamin Hedrick was a chemistry professor at UNC. He was from Rowan County in North Carolina, but he was his position was anti-slavery, and it became known that he was going to vote for Fremont in 1856, the Republican candidate. This was terribly anathema, and our old friend W.W. Holden, among others, started campaigning to see if they could get him kicked out, and eventually they certainly did that in 1857, I think.
What's fascinating, again, about that is it sort of cast Holden in a different light again. He's somebody who shows up on every side of every issue in a lot of ways, but it's an important thing to do, and you can't get to that unless you have these documents available.
And Hedrick representing a component of the popular perspective in the state that we usually don't think about so much, but there was an anti-slavery perspective, and certainly a pro-union, big pro-union.
Right around the state. So, and you're also going to be taking comments. Will you, I mean, do you think the project might change, or some of your ideas about what even to put on the blog might change based on some of the responses you'll get, comments?
Absolutely. We are anticipating, you know, just evolving as our users will direct us. And we're really just excited to be kind of part of this phenomenon of taking archival material, digitizing it, and putting in this social media sort of environment. And We're not unique among all the archival repositories. There's some great activities going on through this four-year commemoration, including North Carolina State Archives. We've seen the Washington Post and the New York Times even putting together blogs about the Civil War commemoration. So it's just really interesting to be a part of it.
Well, Biff and Tim, I want to thank you very much for being with us. Biff Hollingsworth is a collecting and public programming archivist at UNC's Wilson Library. Tim West, curator of the library's Southern Historical Collection. The Civil War Day-by-Day blog is live. You can find it at lib.unc.edu/blogs/Civil War. And the Homefront on the Hill exhibit is going to be displayed at the Wilson Library through May 8th. And Frank Fee, thank you for being on the program today. And Frank is going to speak about news and journalism during the Civil War tomorrow at 3 at the Wilson Special Collections Library at UNC. And for more information about that, you can visit lib.unc.edu. And, of course, our website is stateofthings.org. You can go there anytime. You can follow us on Facebook. Our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Bill Kumpf and Nasser Abbas are our interns. Robin Copley is the technical director. Managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.